For standing by, I'd like to remind all participants today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Tanya. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the SCI call on the 20th of February, 2013. On the call today, we have Ron Andras, Amir El-Sadir, Anik Mascalese, Thomas Rickett, Avi Doria, and J. Scott Evans has joined the AC room. We have apologies from Walt Ulrich Knobben and Marika Koenigs. James Liddell may be attentive to the apology. He might make it later on. From staff, we have Julie Headland and myself, Natalie Peregrine. I'd like to remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. J. Scott Evans has just joined the audio bridge. Thank you very much, and over to you, Ron.
Thank you very much, Natalie. And good afternoon, good evening, good morning to all who are attending the call today. It's very good to have you on the call, and I much appreciate it. We now have, I see Jay Scott is also trying to get in, and so I expect that we will pick up a couple of members as we go along. So I'd like to start the call, as we all do, often do, with the statements of interest to ask if anyone has any changes to their statements of interest since we last met. Hearing none. I will go forward and put it to the record that there have been no changes to any of the SOIs by SCI committee members since the last call. Thank you. Welcome, Jay Scott. I see you're on board now. I wondered, Julie, we have the first order of business is the approval of the agenda. Is it possible to just pop that up before we get to this first document?
It's actually up in the Adobe Connect room.
Maybe I need to refresh my screen.
It's on the right hand.
Determination. I beg your pardon. Thank you very much. I'm reading from it and asking for it at the same time. Thank you. So does anyone have any comments or additions with regard to the agenda today? Hearing none, we'll move forward with it. As we see, it's quite a bit of work to get done in the 1 hour, and we're now at 4:09 according to my clock, so we're a little behind the schedule, so we'll get after it post-haste. First item is the termination and suspension of a PDP. The document is now up on the screen in front of us. I want to commend everyone who's done the work on this to get to the point we're at. And we've came now to the final point, as I understand it. Marika posted just prior to this meeting or within the last day, and there was a comment by Anne, and just for a point of clarification. So, Anne, perhaps I can give you the floor.
Yes, thanks very much, Ron. This is Anne with IPC, and I think, you know, Marika's done a great job with this. I only had one housekeeping comment, which was that in the second line of the paragraph that's below item 3, there's in the blue lettering, upon the recommendation of the PDPWG, I think that what Marika had advised that was that all those references to WG should be changed to the PDP team. So I asked Julie to verify that with her, but I think that that's supposed to, upon the recommendation of the PDPWG should also be the PDP team based on everything else that Marika did. And then the only other thing that came up was when I had looked at Marika's revised language, I was wondering where there's not a recommendation of the working group or team. There's a requirement that we have that the proposal to suspend or terminate go out for public comment. And so I'm the one who added in this business about if there's a motion properly made and seconded to suspend or terminate. But Marika, I think, felt that wasn't necessary in order to get anything out for public comment in the absence of a recommendation from the working group. And so what I was trying to isolate here was what's the procedural trigger that causes there to be an actual proposed termination or suspension? If it's not coming from the working group and if the item is supposed to go out for public comment, what's the official procedural trigger that gets it sent out for public comment? Is it the chair's discretion, or is it, I mean, how to how is it determined that it needs, you know, that it will go out for public comment? And that's the only reason that I brought up the issue of motion properly made and seconded, but Marika had said that wasn't the best mechanism to use.
Thank you, Anne. So there's really two points. One is the PDP working group, or WG, versus PDP team. And the second element is one that's more of a trigger. I see both Julie and Avery coming up, but I would just comment before I give the floor to them. As I understand that PDP working group or PDP team, I understood team was the broader view that may well be include the GNSO Council. And when we talk about the WGE, it's actually that the council, the GNSO Council, puts together a working group. So that was my understanding. So I'm not sure if, in fact, we should be getting consistent language
this is Anne again. I'm sorry. If I may comment on that, what Marika clarified, she did not make that distinction. She said that in the connection with the policy development process revisions for the manual, that the term PDP team was used so that if it's so elected later on, the GNSO Council could create a PDP team that was in a form other than the working group form, and that it was intended to be a broader term, and that therefore we should be using the term PDP team rather than PDP working group, because that's what the new manual says.
Very good. That's helpful. I recall that there was that discussion about this, about leaving some leeway for that. So I see Avery, but I also see Julie. So perhaps I can turn to staff to respond to that first, Avery, and then come to you. Julie?
Just to concur on that first item, that as Marika clarified, PDP team is the correct terminology, the broader terminology, as Anne noted as well. With respect to the second item, the motion, whether or not there needs to be a motion properly made and seconded to suspend or terminate the PDP, I see Avery has lowered her hand, but I don't know if Avery... Avery's asking, where is a PDP team defined? I'd have to look in this PDP manual to see where it is defined. I think it is defined somewhere, but that's a very good question, and I'll check and make sure we can identify that.
Very good.
Since Aubrey has lowered her hand, I can speak to the item with respect to whether or not there needs to be any action that occurs prior to the initiation of a comment period or putting something out for a public comment, if I'm understanding Anne's question correctly. I think Marika pointed out on the list, but just to reiterate, any group or chair of a group can decide to put something out for public comment. It doesn't require a motion or action by the council. So the question of how do we know that looking back at Anne's message, how do we know that the GNSO intends to actually take a vote on the suspension before putting out something for public comment? Not a trigger for the public comment, but let me just look back at this language. Anne, is your concern more that there needs to be a trigger for the suspension or termination? And I'm not sure if I'm following you, and I've probably gotten muddled up here, and you've got your hand raised, Anne, so please.
Anne, please go ahead.
Yes, thanks. It's Anne with IPC. I think I understood, Julie, that when Marika said, you know, any group can put something out for public comment, but the two situations here that lead into this language about the requirement for public comment are, you know, one, that there's no working group formed, or two, that there's no recommendation from the working group. And I wonder if working group should say PDP team again now. I'm getting a little confused with the terms. But so in this situation, there's nobody else who's going to be, you know, as a group saying we're putting this out for public comment, because the GNSO Council does not have to put it out for public comment if there's a recommendation from the PDP working group. But they do have to put it out for public comment under this language if there's no recommendation from the working group or if no working group has been formed. And so when we say, well, any group can put things out for public comment, where this clause applies, there's no group to do that. So that was the issue I was trying to tackle as to, you know, who would take the decision. This needs to go out for public comment in that, in those situations.
So, Anne, thank you for that. I think that, you know, to correct me where I'm wrong here, but I understood when we first started to drill down into this one, the issue was really about whether there should be a report at the if we couldn't get, if there was a suspension or a termination of any sort, that there had to be some kind of a report that would go out to the community for transparency. Why was this suspended? Why did this stop?
So right, that's more, all in there. Mm-hmm.
That's right. So it was more about that. That was the the kernel that we were trying to get to. So now, if I understand, we've managed to master that. The question now comes is how do we, where is the trigger point to send this to a public comment? The question I'm wondering is there the idea then if a report comes out that automatically will it's a public comment? Or not a report. We've said we're calling it a summary now. So a summary comes out, then automatically we need a public comment on that.
No, not at all. No.
Okay.
No, so, see, where this came through was when Jay Scott started doing some drafting, and then Marika did some drafting, and the whole notion of under what circumstances you would go out for public comment came in that process where both Jay Scott and Marika were redrafting, and
mm-hmm.
what. It was they determined was that if there was a recommendation from the working group to suspend or to terminate, that you didn't need to send it out for public comment, but that if there was no recommendation from the working group to suspend or terminate, or if a working group had not yet been formed, that the council should send it out for public comment. So all we're trying to do here is identify, you know, when somebody's if there's no working group recommendation, but somebody is proposing a termination or a suspension, what is it that triggers that public comment on the proposed termination or suspension, say, in the absence of a working group having been formed? What's the mechanism? You know, does the chair do it alone as a matter of discretion? Can any council member on his own request or her own request cause it to be put out for public comment? I'm certainly not hung up on motion made and seconded. It's just what is the triggering mechanism that gets it out for public comment where there's no working group or no working group recommendation?
Thank you very much for that clarification. Do we have any other members of the committee that want to take a stab at this? And I'm wondering, Julie, if we might be able to scroll a page down and see if is there anything of this with this regard on the second page, because there were two pages here, if I'm not mistaken, or is this just a single-page document?
It is a single-page document, Ron. This is Julie.
Okay.
One of the things that Marika and I had talked about was that any council member can request that something go out for public comment. And I thought this was addressed in the last, that the trigger was in the last sentence in the penultimate paragraph where it says the GNSO Council will publicly specify the reasons for the recommended action and will conduct a public comment forum on the proposed termination or suspension. So there's
actually,
no motion required.
You know what? If I may jump in here, Ron, I think that what Julie is pointing out would be the answer to this issue, because rather than using my language about the proposed, you know, motion made and seconded, if we simply put in the language that Julie mentioned, which also appears at the very beginning of the last paragraph of that page, so that it says that upon the request of any council member, that there will be, you know, the public comment period, so that if there's no recommendation for proposed termination or suspension by the GNSO council, but a council member has requested, a council member has proposed to suspend or terminate the PDP prior to final report. In other words, put in the same mechanism there to trigger the public comment. Sure.
And I think Julie may have captured it actually in the. If I look at the chat, a public comment period will be initiated on the request of any council member.
In other words, the language that's already there is
okay. Sufficient.
If we start with that sentence, in the event that no working group has been formed or there is no recommendation from the PDP team for a proposed termination or suspension by the GNSO Council, but if any council member has proposed to suspend or terminate the PDP prior to final report, the GNSO Council will publicly specify the reasons and will conduct a public comment forum.
Can hold that language. Jay Scott, please.
I just think we're overcomplicating this. I mean, I think that the language as written without Anne's additional language says that, in the event there is no recommendation from the PDB team, and I'm not sure what's a working group or what's a PDB team, but there's no working group, there's no recommendation, the council puts it out for public comment before they can have their vote on whether to suspend. It says that. I don't understand what we're looking for here.
Just that somebody has to propose that there be a suspension or termination? Otherwise, why does it go out for public comment?
At some point, it gets to where we're getting so granular, you know, it's like, and it has to be done on blue paper. You know, this is not the Supreme Court of the United States. I just think, you know, it goes... They need to know the rules, and the rules.
Well, exactly. They need to know the rules. So, and I'm happy to take out the language with motion and second. And I'm very happy to take that out. I mean, if everyone else is comfortable that the GNSO Council knows exactly when that they have to put this out for public comment, then I'll certainly let it go.
Well, here's what I would recommend, having heard from everyone. We're now getting a little late on this particular discussion. So what I would recommend is let's get this in a final cleaned-up document. In other words, Julie, if you could please take away all of the – give us a clean document and send it around to the list. And if we can all agree on it between now and next call, we'll send it back then to the council. Because at this stage, I think I'm tending to agree with Jay Scott. We're getting down into very, very thin slices, and with good reason, because that's our job. But I think we're probably pretty close on this one. So let's have a look at it in a clean format without any markup, and we'll take it from there on the next call. So I see that several members have joined a little bit late. You're all welcome. Angie, nice to see you on the call, and also Mary, thank you very much. At the top of this conversation, I wanted to make mention that we have a new member, Amir El-Sadir, who's joined the call and joined the team from NTUC. And I take this opportunity, now we have more members on the call, to welcome him to our committee. And we look forward to seeing his work over the weeks and months as we go forward. Clearly, today will be his day to have an opportunity to listen and learn. So welcome, Amir. Moving back to the agenda, now we move on to resubmitting a motion. We had created a sub-team on this to kind of work through the details of it, and I want to thank all of you that worked on the development of this. As I understand it, it was Anne, Avery, Thomas, and Mary. So thank you all very much for doing the work. Which one of you four intrepid warriors would like to take us through what you submitted to us, to the members, on an email recently in terms of your conclusions?
Ron, this is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I see Anne and probably Thomas on as well. So Thomas Sully can correct me if I get anything wrong, and so can Julie, but we had a call last week, I think, to work out a few possible options. And you see there are really 2 points. First of all, we wanted to clarify with the rest of the group that even though the council request that came to us had a reference to conflicts of interest as well as resubmitting a motion, because there are some connections between the two, that really our sub-team was going to focus just on the question of resubmitting a motion independent of what happened at the last council meeting. And as
Perfect.
Such, the conflict of interest issue is something that the SGI has yet to tackle. So having discussed that, we then looked at some possible options, and Julie did a nice job of summing it all up. We felt that, you know, the first option, leaving it up to the discretion of the chair of the GNSO Council, was unlikely to get consensus even amongst the SCI, so we started to look at other options, which you basically see as 2B in the document there. And we agreed that there should be criteria that are fairly high standard type criteria. And so you've got the four various possible steps there. The one thing that I want to highlight instead of reading it through that is we thought that if a motion is resubmitted, right, and having gone through the steps, it would first have to follow the procedural rules for every motion. So it's got to be published at least 8 days in advance. We assumed that it would then be put on the consent agenda for the next GNSO Council meeting, but that at that point, following the council rules on consent agendas, if any councillor from any group objected to not just the substance of, not even the substance of the motion, right, but the fact that the motion's been resubmitted, that that gets taken off the consent agenda and gets discussed as a separate item at the council. In other words, the resubmission itself gets discussed before the council moves to discuss the substance of the motion. And we modeled that on two things. First, the consent agenda rules, and secondly, a vague analogy to the friendly versus unfriendly amendments, where if one amendment is viewed as unfriendly, that gets voted on first before the actual motion is voted on. I hope that's clear to most folks, and if Thomas wants to add anything, but that was our thinking, and that resulted in this suggestion that we are submitting to the rest of the SCI for discussion.
Thank you very much, Mary. Thomas, do you, I see in the notes you have nothing to add, so you've done a fine job of summarizing. For myself and others who aren't clear about the consent agenda, I'm just wondering why this would find its way onto a consent agenda, because as we've seen, it's been a thorny issue. So could someone share some light on why it would find its way automatically onto the consent agenda?
John, this is Mary again, and I should have probably clarified that first off. And again, it has to do with the difference between the act of resubmitting a motion and the actual substantive discussion and vote on the motion. So the consent agenda would simply say, this motion has been resubmitted, are we okay with that? And if nobody objects, the resubmission goes through, and then the motion itself can be discussed and voted on as part of the meeting. Does that make sense?
So that's a two-step process then.
Yeah, so we want to provide a sort of additional step/safeguard on the resubmission process itself to allow a councillor from any stakeholder group, if they have problems with the motion being resubmitted, to have a chance to raise it before the motion itself gets discussed.
Jaisal, I see that you have made a note. Thank you, Mary. Jaisal, would you please take the floor?
Yeah, I think that when you say things like there's been a change in circumstance that merits the resubmission of a motion, you're just asking three people to argue about that. I think it would be easier to say something like publish the text of the resubmission as it does, blah, 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 along with your justification for resubmission or all your reasoning for resubmission. And then when the discussion comes up, people can decide whether that's a sufficient reasoning. But when you put things like a change in circumstances that merits, that's just a bunch of stuff for lawyers to argue about. I think if you say, explain why you want to resubmit this and your justification for doing so, okay, they do it. Now everyone can have a discussion at the council level whether that merits it being reconsidered, but you haven't given it some sort of defined terminology that people want to argue over.
recommendation? We sharpen that up?
Mine would just say, set out one or more avenues. Publish the text of the resubmitted motion as of the deadline for submission of motions, along with a clear explanation of the reasoning for resubmitting the motion. And just strike one.
Thank you, Jay Scott. Mary, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, and you know, we really didn't get very far down the discussion of a change of circumstances, and for precisely that reason. Because that had been suggested, I think, in prior email exchanges, possibly even by myself, we felt that we wanted to at least put that on the table for this group to consider. I can't speak for the rest of the group, but I would think that what Jay Scott is suggesting is something that's pretty close to what the rest of the group would be thinking about anyway. So I personally don't have an objection to that. I think it captures the sense, and it's similar to what we have as, number three there, that there has to be a seconder from each house. I mean, it still goes to, you can't just resubmit a motion because you feel like it or because somebody said, we didn't do the right thing the last time or something like that. So that's the idea. And so if you require a seconder from each house to show that there is support, and secondly, what Jay Scott suggested, that there is a requirement that there's a description of the reason for the resubmission, I would be okay with that.
Excellent. Thank you. Avery, please go ahead.
Thank you. So basically, we're proposing that it's anyone for any reason can bring a motion to say, I would like to vote on this again. I don't know. Are these reasons cumulative? Do they have to also do that 8 days in advance? Or is it sufficient to do that in the very meeting where it happened? Or are these a set of cumulative? No, it says set one or more. So it could be just enough that someone says, I want to, because of whatever, including the face of the moon. And as long as there's someone from each house willing to second that, then it goes on for a vote. Am I understanding it correctly?
So this is Mary again. And Avi, I think that the hypothetical you suggested, hopefully it doesn't happen, but my view is that it is cumulative in the sense that all that stuff has to be disclosed and published 8 days prior to the council meeting. In other words, somebody can't just pop up during council meeting and say, oh, here's the reason. So that would be my view. And I think the other point that we discussed briefly, at least, was at some point one has to leave these matters to hopefully the best judgment of the councillors, and that there would not be frivolous or vexatious or annoying attempts to delay a process or to game the system, as it were. We simply couldn't figure out an alternative way in a time given to us that would address all of these possibilities. But we thought that this would be at least a good starting point, and cumulatively, in my view, would work as a starting point anyway.
Okay, if I can. So it's cumulative of 1 plus 2 plus 3. 4 is something different, or is 4 also part of this same cumulative package? In which case, I'm still... And I apologize. I was supposed to be in the group and didn't participate. But... I guess I don't understand how it works.
And again, Thomas or someone.
Let me take a shot. This is Ron. Let me take a shot how I understand it, and then maybe get a try and see if we can get everyone looking at the same understanding. I understand this that we're talking about specifically about option number two. Possible options for addressing resubmission would be one, leave it to the discretion of the chair. Or the other option would be to set high-level criteria. And that high-level criteria then, in my view, I think it says one or more. I would certainly favor two, at least two high-level criteria must be satisfied. And change in circumstances, does need to be a little bit tightened up. I agree with Jay Scott on that language. But then the second, then after that, would be you would have to publish this text for the resubmitted motion in the standard program 8 days before the council meeting. And then 3 and 4 come together for me. So correct me if I'm wrong, Mary, but 3 and 4, basically the seconded motion of each house is a prerequisite, and to get it on the consent agenda, and then to move it from the consent agenda to an actual vote needs a second activity. So 3 and 4 for me are kind of 3.1, 3.2. Do I have a right understanding, Mary? Or Thomas, I see your hand up. Please go ahead.
I think the idea behind it was that if you need to have a seconder from each house.
Right.
After certainly having published your reasoning for it 8 days prior to the council meeting, you know, that would be the deadline for all motions. And the nice thing about the consent agenda is that whenever a councillor has difficulties with dealing with something on the consent agenda, which means that there is no proper discussion on it, then we move to 4. So two things can happen. Either it is left on the consent agenda and everybody says it's okay, and then chances are quite good that the whole council supports the idea that is obviously shared by at least one councillor in each house that has supported the resubmission of a motion, that the case has merit. And then actually the motion can be voted upon. But if there is an issue with it, if one councillor thinks that, you know, the resubmission is vexatious or that it doesn't have merit, then we come to 4 and the councillor can ask for the resubmission itself, which is not the resubmitted motion, but ask for the resubmission to be discussed outside the consent agenda. And that will open the floor for all councillors to exchange views and discuss the merits of the case. And only if that vote passes, then the resubmitted motion will be deliberated and voted upon.
Thank you, Thomas. Anne, I see your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Ron. I did want to note, based on earlier comment about 2A, that I think, you know, Thomas and Mary were both just, you know, fairly reflecting comment previously made by Jay Scott that, in his view, that this should be left up to the discretion of the chair. The only reason I mention that is that I do not actually have direct input yet on this topic from the IPC or IPC leadership, and so I do need to leave it open with respect to whether, you know, the IPC would look at this as something that needs to be left up to the discretion of the chair. However, looking at the alternative here, 2B, to me personally, it seems reasonable, the requirement for change in circumstance as modified by Jay Scott's comments, and also the publish the text, you know, 8 days prior to the next council meeting. I would not recommend to IPC in seeking direction from leadership that they go along with requirement 3, because I think that requirement is politically too charged. In other words, that it would be too tempting for someone in the other house to base their decision not on whether the, you know, there was really a change in circumstances, but on what their original vote in connection with the merits of the matter had been, and, you know, that would be too big of a temptation.
Thank you very much, Anne. All those comments from everyone were well taken. I'm going to recommend that what we might do, as this is very fresh, take it back to our constituencies, our stakeholder groups, in which case that they can have a look at this and give some feedback. I know for myself, I would be very happy to send this to my ExCom and let our councillors and our chair and others kind of weigh in on this thought that they feel it would be a most appropriate way. So if everyone agrees with that, what I will do is take this work from the subgroup and thank you for having put it together. We'll send it out to, I recommend we send it out to our various constituencies and get some feedback. So when we come back to our next call, we might even have some documentation in the meantime where we can add comments and add thoughts to this on the list. and hopefully we can drill down a little deeper on it when we get back to our next call. I see Anne agrees with me. Anyone else disagree? Excellent. So that's what we'll do with this resubmitting a motion. Jay Scott, I see your hand. Please go ahead. Oh, you agree. Thank you very much. All right, so then we'll take that action, and we'll move on now to the next item on the agenda, and it's the Charter Revision Drafting Team. To give some background to this, I had spoken a couple of meetings back that when I took over the chair responsibilities, I went back and reviewed the charter for the SCI and found that there was a number of issues that were old and outdated that really had no reference to or relevance to what we are doing here today. So our time is up according to my clock, if I could just get rid of that. I'm coming back to the comment that there was references in the charter that don't reflect where we are today. And every charter needs to be a living document that is reflective of the circumstances of the day. So what I wanted to do was to create a small sub-team that would do just as our team did on this motion issue, go back and kind of look at the changes and make some recommendations to the SCI as a whole. I've heard from a number of people, and in fact, Avery shared, I think, on the first call that she would be interested in being on that team. Not to put you into it, Avery, this is an open call. But I have heard from Angie Graves and James Bladel and Jay Scott independently that they would be interested in working on that. So I just wanted to ask if, in fact, those on the call, Angie, I see Jay Scott, Avery, and James, I don't know if he's had a chance to join or not, if that would make sense. So I'm waiting to hear from Jay Scott's in. Thank you very much. Angie, can you confirm? Thank you very much. Avery? Wonderful. Thank you very much. And so I will leave it to the four of you to get with Julie to set a call and to discuss the charter. And thank you very much for stepping up and doing that charter review. It's important that we do this regularly, and this is a good time for us to do it. Moving on then, we now move to actions on the working group survey. The survey, as we recall, was developed so that we could gather information from the working groups to see if, in fact, we as an organization are using the working groups effectively, and if there's good communication between the GNSO Council in their instruction to the working group and so forth. And that document set that out. I think that most of us have gone and gone through that document ourselves, and there were a number of comments that came back from those of us on the SCI with regard to that document. I'm not sure, Julie, if you have the document you could post right now, the summary of the survey that's at hand?
Hi, this is Julie. I actually do not have it loaded. I have to confess I'm a little bit confused, though, because the summary actually and the comments in the summary are not about the survey. The comments in the summary are about the working group guidelines and things that they should include or not include. For instance, there were comments relating to whether or not there should be more language in the guidelines relating to conflicts of interest or something, you know, related to statements of interest. I don't have them all in front of me, but so my question is that I thought what this group was going to consider doing next was whether or not to put that survey out to a larger group to see if there were any questions about whether or not the questions in the survey itself were suitable.
Yeah, thank you, Julie. In fact, that
ready for that a group to use, perhaps, as I think like IRTPC was a suggestion that was made.
Thank you for that. Sorry to interrupt you. I was under that understanding myself when it first came on the table, and I had pushed for as many members as possible of the committee to go and test it themselves and get a feel for it. And I was actually making a statement that we should just send it on because none of us had any pushback on that. But then when I went back and looked at the various comments, I realized that there was more discussion to be had, and I apologized to the committee. So I think if it's not at hand right now, please let's get it organized, and we'll move this action item up further on the top of the agenda for our next call so that we can look at those points and discuss it in more detail.
But I'm still not understanding. This is Julie Hedlin. I'm still not understanding, Ron. The summary is a summary of the comments that people provided when they took the survey. The comments related to the working group guidelines and what should be changed in the working group guidelines, because, of course, that's what the survey is asking. It's asking people to respond to what they think about the working group guidelines once they've read them. I could not identify any comments in the survey itself that related to the suitability of the survey. Now, if I'm missing comments, and I haven't seen anything on our email list or anything, I guess I would need clarification. Have the SEI members commented on the content of the survey itself, the survey questions?
That's my point, Julie, is that right now I'm looking at a screen that says nothing being shared. You're telling us.
But what I'm saying, Ron, is that the summary, the survey, simply gathers the comments that people made when they took the survey, and those comments do not relate to the survey. They relate to the working group guidelines.
I understand.
They were trying to capture in the survey, so it seemed like the survey worked, or it was capturing information.
Julie, with respect to what you're saying, I understand what you're saying, but I have a committee, and we're talking about an action on a working group survey, and you are telling us information, but we cannot see it. So a lot of us don't recollect it. So what I'd like to do is on the next call is I would like to have this summary and that information posted. We can all look at it and we can agree or disagree with what you're saying. That's not the problem. The problem is right now we're ill-informed. We don't have the information to send this on, because this has been an item that's been on our agenda for some time, and many of us have forgotten since we took the survey. And I think it would be a wise decision for us just to look through the survey together and make sure that in fact we're all in agreement before we send it on.
Thank you, Brown. This is Julie. I did send that information prior to the call on the 6th, and I apologize because I was not on the call on the 6th, but this indicates to me that this item was not discussed, and that summary that I sent and had prepared to be posted was not discussed. So I will resend that summary, and I guess I would just ask, though, that perhaps there could be some discussion on the list as well.
Thank you. Avery.
Yeah, and I want to apologize to Julie on this, because I think, once again, I was partly responsible for causing this. I seemed to remember that some of my comments related to the survey. I looked at what you sent before last week's meeting, and I think concluded that while I had made some wise-ass remarks about the survey while taking it, that perhaps those remarks weren't all that important or relevant. And although there may be stuff working, that's worth talking about that. But you did indeed send it out last time. I remember looking at it and going, not as substantial as I thought it had been. And I do think we just need to go through it. But, that's all. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Avery. And that's my point as well, Julia. So I think we're clear on it. It's just that we didn't get to that work in this time that we do, so we need to see it before we can. So with that, then, I'll move on to the chair-vice-chair elections and terms. There was a charter change that would be in keeping with the charter revision of point number 6, and this had to do with enshrining in the charter some language about the terms for the chair and the vice chair, because we did not have that in the original charter. Jay Scott has been kind enough to rework that for us, and I think that we're pretty well there. I wonder, Jay Scott, if you could just refresh us with the change that you made.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. let's see where we are. I don't see, if you want me to look at this document, is this the document we have up in the PDF?
I understand this to be the charter, and can if we, are we at the, can we, I don't see myself the language with regard to the chair and vice chair. I think that might be further down.
I've been given the power to scroll. Now I see it.
There you go.
Can everybody see where I've scrolled down to?
If you've got...
Yes.
We probably, now that we're there, how do we make it larger?
I think Julie can...
Actually, what you can do is at the bottom of the screen, there's a minus and a plus.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you very much, Julie.
Okay. You know, we basically have changed this so now that we, when we only have two candidates for chair, then they will run, there will be an election.
Jake Scott, this is Julie Hedlund. I just want to check something quickly. I may have put up an older version of the document. Let me just let me just check something here. I had another one. Okay. I apologize for this, but I think this is the one dated February 6th that you sent out immediately following the meeting on February 6th. So I think this is the latest version. Apologize for that.
Okay. So basically we have a one-year term with a two-year term limit. And in December of each year, we're going to ask for volunteers to serve as chair and vice chair, and if the current vice chair and chair are not terminated, they wish to continue, then there won't be any election. But if there is more than, I think that's there's a typo in that, if there is more than, if you say one volunteer, it says on volunteer now. If there's more than one volunteer for either position, then you can go to an election. The first option is when there are only two candidates for chair and no vice chair candidate. They run an election, and the losing candidate will have the option of accepting the position of vice chair. Okay? If he or she elects not to accept, then we make a call for vice chair. If there are more than two candidates for the chair, or more candidates, or one or more candidates for the vice chair, then we hold an election for that as well. And in the event no candidate, I think this is to handle Aubrey's question about a plurality, receives their majority, we will conduct an election between the two candidates that receive the most votes. So, that's it.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you very much. So, this is a charter amendment that we'll be proposing to the GNSO Council for their approval. I just wanted to bring this back on the table with the final language to bring everyone's attention to it, to recognize that we have enshrined this new elements into the into our charter, or we would like to have them enshrined in our charter, better said. So that was the purpose of bringing it onto the agenda today. Does anyone have any comments or thoughts they would like to bring to this? Hearing none. Please go ahead, Jay Scott.
This is Jay Scott Evans for IPC. I think if we're going to do a look at the entire charter, we might as well not submit things piecemeal, and we should look at the whole charter, understanding that we've basically resolved this issue, but submit them all to the council at the same time.
Absolutely. That's what I was referring to. So if I wasn't clear, I apologize. I'm saying that for our part, at the SCI, we agree on this language now. So when we get to the charter revision and updating, then this language can automatically flow into that. Okay, if there's no other thoughts or questions on this, then I will move us on to the item 9 regarding our GNSO Council liaison to the SCI. As we spoke on the last call, I sent a letter to Jonathan, the chair of the GNSO Council, advising him that the council have a opportunity to have a liaison with the SCI. And he graciously responded before this call and sent back an email that recommended, or as I had recommended, basically there were two options. One option was a traditional liaison appointed by the council that would, for example, be a member of the council appointed to serve as liaison to the SCI as prescribed by the GNSO working groups, or the chair and or vice chair of the SCI would serve as liaisons to the council and would participate as observers to the council meetings upon invitation. And Jonathan's response, which came to the, was sent to the entire list, said that he would recommend to the council that we would have what he called a hybrid, which would be they will provide a liaison to us, and that they will invite the chair and or vice chair to the council on specific issues when appropriate. So that's the general situation we have right now with regard to that liaison, and I think it's a good solution. If there's any comments regarding that, they are welcome at this point. Hearing none, please.
I didn't get my hand up in time.
Okay, Aubrey, go ahead, please.
Okay, so if I understand the situation now is basically we wait until they appoint a liaison or we wait until they invite us for a meeting, and if we think it's important for us to be at a meeting to explain something, we ask for an invitation. Is that where we're leaving it? That's what seems to me, that we've done our bit, we sent a letter, we got an answer, and now it's up to them to appoint someone.
That's how I understand it, Aubrey.
Okay,
and quite frankly, I think that you know, that's a, it's a very good solution. As you said, we've done our work. We've asked them. We've invited them to come, and I look forward to hearing from Jonathan once this has gone for council. The other element that I should note is that at the face-to-face meetings, we have a responsibility to report our activities to the council, and I intend to be doing so in Beijing. So.
Okay.
All face-to-face meetings will report. All right. So then the only other thing that we have on our agenda then after this is any other business. And does anyone have something they'd like to bring to the discussion today? Hearing none, I thank everyone for your contributions, those who came early, those who came late, those who had to drop off. Always appreciated the thoughts and considerations you bring to the SCI. And with regard to the outstanding items and action items, Julie will send them around as she does so well at the end of this call. And I would look forward to hearing back from the new subcommittee we've created, and thank the last subcommittee for drilling down and coming back with some concrete proposals. It's been very helpful. So thank you, everyone.
Ron.
Thank you, everyone. Bye for now.
Bye.